Maislin Antrim with Pharmacy Times, and you're listening to Pharmacy Focus Oncology Edition, where we break down the latest news in the oncology pharmacy space. This month, I spoke with Carolos Hanna, Oncology Pharmacy Manager at the University of Minnesota Medical Center in Maple Grove, Minnesota, about the latest updates in ovarian cancer and the growing role that PARP inhibitors are playing in this space. So to start, what are your thoughts on where the treatment of ovarian cancer stands currently and how it has evolved over the last decade or so?
So I think, you know, when we look at our ovarian cancer patient population, over the past couple of years, we've had a lot of exciting new updates in this patient population. You know, I think when we talk about the management of our patients, you know, majority of time, I think your early stage patients, so those patients that are coming in when you're stage one disease, et cetera, oftentimes these patients, you know, we may take them to chemo, we may have some type of surgical procedures for them. Now, when you get to stage two, three, and four, I think when we talk about frontline treatment, it hasn't really changed significantly over the past several years. We are still treating this patient population with platinum-containing chemotherapy, for example. We may take them to surgery, do some type of debulking surgeries. But I think really a lot of the areas that have changed in terms of our ovarian and gynecological cancer patient population is more in that maintenance phase. What do we do for the patient who, after we treated with platinum-containing chemotherapy, who may have gone to surgery, whether they have HRD proficient tumors or HRD deficient tumors, what is the role of maintenance therapy play for this patient population? And I think when you look at the clinical trials that date back, you know, several years, as early as 2016, we started to see FDA approvals. It was, I think, bevacizumab was one of the very first ones, kind of one of the more VEGF targeted kind of therapies move into the space, sometimes in combination with chemotherapy. And then even going into 2017, we started seeing all of our PARP inhibitors moving into the space, especially in that maintenance phase. You have niraparib, olaparib, rucaparib, et cetera, et cetera. So it's been really, really exciting for this patient population. But I do think that when we also look at how many people are actually using maintenance therapy in the patient population, in the ovarian cancer patient population, there's significant unmet need there in those patients. You look at the numbers, and Flatiron has actually conducted some studies looking at how many patients are getting put on maintenance, despite the fact that there are FDA approvals now and even NCCN guidelines support, and higher than desired percentages of patients are not going to maintenance therapy. So really exciting, you know, in terms of this patient population, a lot of exciting advancements, but obviously a lot of room where pharmacy and other HCPs have can play in the management of these patients.
It's so encouraging to see so much progress. How do treatment approaches vary for newly diagnosed versus recurrent ovarian cancer?
And so I think, you know, when you're newly diagnosed, like I mentioned, it's still going to be, we're going to take them to surgery and we're going to put them on platinum-containing chemotherapy. You know, oftentimes if your patient doesn't go on to maintenance therapy, or even when they recur, we're looking back at how these patients potentially tolerated chemotherapy, how quickly did they progress after receiving chemotherapy. One important concept in the ovarian cancer patient population, are they platinum sensitive or are they platinum therapy refractory? Oftentimes, that's defined by a 6 months window. So if I treated my patient with platinum-containing chemo, whether or not I put them on PARP inhibition maintenance, for example, if that disease recurs or comes back, was it within a short period of time or a long period of time? Because oftentimes, when you're considering treatment approaches in that second line and beyond settings, you're looking at that because you could sometimes potentially retry platinum-containing therapy, depending obviously to not just about the timing, but comorbidities the patient may have, how frail they may be, how well they tolerated therapy prior. Did they have significant cytopenias and neuropathies and other complications? So these are certainly things that we're looking at when we're making those specific treatment decisions for our patients.
What role do PARP inhibitors play in ovarian cancer?
So PARP inhibitors, you know, play a significant role in ovarian cancer. And I think when we talk about PARP inhibition, I think one of the most impactful things that PARP inhibitors have brought to the space have been in the maintenance phase for these patients who are getting treated for, you know, advanced ovarian cancer. But before we actually delve into content of PARP inhibition, it's also important for us to highlight that what PARP inhibitors actually do. right? Our cancer cells and general cells are very smart, and PARP inhibition, or PARP specifically, it's a protein found within our cells that actually allows the body, when anytime there's any type of DNA damage, PARP can actually go in and repair any type of DNA breaks. So when we inhibit PARP, we actually inhibit the ability of cancer cells to repair the damaged DNA. And as a result, you end up having a lot of DNA strands with a lot of breaks. And because of that, the cell can no longer handle that genetic instability. But another thing that also goes in hand in hand with PARP inhibition and this whole pathway, it's what I mentioned a little bit earlier. It's HRD proficiency. So a lot of healthy cells can also have what we call HRD. And HRD is another mechanism outside of PARP that can allow cancer cells to repair, or healthy cells to repair DNA breaks, even double strand breaks within the DNA. So sometimes what we've observed in ovarian cancer cells is that these cells have HRD deficiencies. So when we talk about HRD deficiencies, that's very, very important. That may lead to things like BRCA mutations, which are considered under those deficiencies. The key important thing there is that when you do have HRD deficiencies, PARP inhibitors actually even work better because your cell already doesn't have that ability to fix the DNA in one way. And then on top of that, you inhibit the PARP by inhibiting that additional mechanism. And I would say, you know, roughly 50 to 55% of ovarian cancer patients are HRD deficient. Now, breaking it down into various BRCA mutations, it's different there. But again, it's about 50 to 55% are going to have that HRD deficiencies. So PARP inhibitors have played a critical role. A lot of clinical trials have reported out in this patient population. We have SOLO-1, PAOLA-1, PRIMA trial. And all of these have really, you know, demonstrated that whether you go PARP inhibitor versus placebo, patients are living longer. They're having better progression-free survival outcomes going on to maintenance therapy. And I think even when you look at NCCN guidelines, regardless of, you know, utilizing bevacizumab early into treatment, regardless of what approach you went, and also regardless of the type of response the patient has had. So did they have a complete response? Did they have a partial response? Did they have stable disease or progressive disease? Really across the board, it's very unlikely that you fall into a scenario where observation would be the modality that you should go down because of the significant advancements that we've had. And SOLO-1, for example, the SOLO-1 trial, this compared ultimately olaparib and placebo. You know, you look at the median follow-up at about 40 months, I believe is what we have now, 40 to 41 months median follow-up. The three-year overall benefit for this patient population was significantly better. So in the overall patient population, the median progression-free survival for patients for olaparib was 22 months versus about 16 to 16 and a half months for the placebo. So pretty notable difference there. And now it's not just initial readouts. We even have long-term data there. So pretty exciting in this patient population.
What are some currently approved PARP inhibitors for this patient population, and how have they changed the treatment landscape?
Absolutely. You know, when we look at currently approved PARP inhibitors, we have three currently approved PARP inhibitors in ovarian cancer patient populations. You know, dating back to March of 2017, niraparib was approved for maintenance in the adult patient population who had either epithelial ovarian, fallopian tube, peritoneal cancers, who either had a CR or a partial response to a platinum-containing chemotherapy. So that was the initial, you know, one of the very first ones, niraparib. The clinical trial there was the NOVA trial. Just in that year, olaparib was also approved. That was based on SOLO-2 and Study 19. April of 2018, we had rucaparib approved. And then we continued to see further readouts. We had SOLO-1 report out, and olaparib gained another approval in December of 2018. This was in specific BRCA mutated ovarian cancers. And also even as early as 2020 in April and in May, we saw additional approvals, one with niraparib based on the PRIMA trial, and also one with olaparib plus bevacizumab combinations based on PAOLA-1. So, you know, we've had a lot of these exciting updates come to market based on all these clinical trials. And, you know, it's I think the conversation is, you know, what do they bring to the table? I mean, better outcomes for our ovarian cancer patient population. But it's certainly important for us to highlight that not all PARP inhibitors are created equally. You know, I think when we're making treatment decisions for our patients, we have to consider the tolerability of these agents. Some of these agents cause extreme fatigue. Some of these agents may cause extreme anemias or maybe other hematologic adverse events. Some of these agents, like olaparib, for example, requires renal adjustment. So if you have someone who has renal impairment, these patients were treated with platinum-containing therapies. Platinum agents impact the kidney. So you could have someone coming to you with renal impairment or borderline renal impairment. They may not be the best candidate for olaparib, or you may have to dose reduce olaparib. What kind of drug interactions are there? What is the preferred method of administration? Does the patient want to take the drug at night? And so some of our PARP inhibitors could be administered at night, actually, because of the potential for the patient to have severe nausea and vomiting. So they sleep through it, you know, per se, when you take it at night. So I would also want to make those considerations when we're making those calls for our patients, because, how did my patient do on their platinum therapy? Did they just have profuse nausea and vomiting? And maybe I would want to go with a PARP inhibitor that doesn't cause a significant nausea and vomiting. So looking at all those different factors for patients, help you tailor therapy to the patient. But again, very exciting times for our ovarian cancer patient population.
Have you listened to the array of other podcasts from Pharmacy Focus? We have content for every specialty, including retail pharmacists, technicians, students, and more. In the latest episode of Pharmacy Focus, host Jill Murphy collaborated with the hosts of the Let's Pharmanize podcast to discuss pharmacist representations in pop culture. Did you know Nightmare on Elm Street 3 has a link to pharmacy? Listen to the episode now to learn more. So Dr. Hanna, what are some key efficacy data for the use of PARP inhibitors in ovarian cancer?
So when we actually talk about the efficacy data for our PARP inhibitors, you know, I think a couple of pivotal trials that would be important for us to talk about. SOLO-1, PAOLA-1, and also PRIMA. So these were some of the pivotal trials that led to a lot of key FDA approvals. Looking at SOLO-1, for example, olaparib versus placebo, all these trials now, by the way, have 3-year readouts. Now, when we look at the overall patient populations, looking at SOLO-1, for example, these patients, 60% of them were benefiting from therapy at about 3 years versus about 27% of the patients that received placebo. When we look at PAOLA-1, we roughly have about a 25 months or so readouts from that specific trial. And whether we're looking at patients who are BRCA mutated, had BRCA wild type, or even were HRP proficient, majority of the patients in the clinical trial did benefit from olaparib plus Bev versus placebo plus Bev. You look at the hazard ratios in that clinical trial, they range anyone from 0.31 all the way to 0.71. I think where the data is somewhat inconsistent is those HRP that are proficient in their HR status. Those patients could be those specific candidates that may be more eligible to maybe go on observation. I know there have been also studies looking at cost effectiveness in terms of going on to maintenance therapy, particularly if you're HRP proficient, et cetera, and what benefit does the therapy bring versus potential financial toxicity. PRIMA, also very similar. So PRIMA was niraparib versus placebo. Overall, the progression-free survival there was about 14 months for PARP-treated patients versus about 8 months for the placebo-treated patients. Hazard ratio there was 0.62. If they were HRD deficient, the hazard ratio was 0.43. And also BRCA mutations aligned right around there, anywhere from 0.4 to 0.5 for BRCA mutations or BRCA wild type. And HRP patients there benefited as well. So looking at PRIMA, the PFS benefit that was observed in HRP patients, so those proficient patients, it was still 8 months PFS for niraparib versus about 5.5 months for placebo with a hazard ratio of 0.68. So I think, taking that and, all that data in totality, we clearly see a trend toward improvement utilizing PARP inhibition in this patient population.
What should pharmacists be aware of when treating patients with PARP inhibitors?
So pharmacists play a critical role for this PARP inhibitor patient population or PARP inhibitor treated patient population. Number one, you know, pharmacists, there's a lot of publications out there through numerous organizations, HOPA, NCODA, ONS, ACCC, that pharmacists play a critical role in oral chemotherapy management. You have the basics there, right? You have adherence and compliance. You have patient education. You have supportive care management. You have the ability for pharmacists and financial navigators to help the patient get through the very complex world of the financial side. None of these therapeutics are inexpensive by any means, right? So there is that aspect of those types of programs. And on top of that, pharmacists also play a critical role for patients on PARP inhibitors, whether the institution has the ability to do in-office dispensing or dispense through your own specialty pharmacies versus going out to external specialty pharmacies. Pharmacists can still play, those clinical pharmacists in the hospitals particularly or in the clinics, play a critical role at bridging some of those gaps because we know there are numerous challenges. PARP inhibitors specifically, looking at some of the AEs that we see, we know that we see anemias. We know that we see nausea and vomiting being a problem. We know that extreme fatigue is sometimes problematic for this patient population. So pharmacists also play a critical role there. It could be through monitoring labs and making sure that the patient is adherent to their labs. Making sure, you know, pharmacists throughout, some institutions have collaborative practices. And this is actually something that we're working on at my specific institution. Pharmacists have a collaborative practice in place where they can prescribe anti-nausea medications. And, you know, you don't really need a provider to prescribe a patient a prescription for ondansetron, prochlorperazine, or whatever it may be, based on what the patient is experiencing. And that really helps integrate the pharmacist within the clinical team, that multidisciplinary team, gives the pharmacist autonomy. And pharmacists are certainly more than capable of being able to help control nausea and vomiting with these medications. Pharmacists can also help in terms of anytime an AE comes up, they can be a direct point of contact. They can help bridge the gaps of getting that patient connected with their provider, connected with their, mid-level or whoever it may be to help address some of those things. Pharmacists can also help in terms of developing educational resources for patients, providing educational resources for patients. Clearly, drug-drug interactions are problematic also. And one key thing that a lot of us sometimes forget is that PARP inhibitors are actually highly protein bound. And this is something that many clinicians actually forget because you don't really get into the nitty gritty of pharmacokinetics and protein binding and things like that. When you look at your ovarian cancer patient population, these women are sometimes younger. They have been heavily pretreated with chemotherapy. They may have lost a lot of weight. They're not eating as well as they should be. Their protein levels are low. Because of their protein levels are low, you put them on a PARP inhibitor, which is highly protein bound, you have a lot of free circulating drug, meaning that some of those small women who may have lost a lot of weight could actually experience more adverse events because of the free circulating drug that someone who maybe is a little bit more healthy or not as frail isn't experiencing. And also that's a key intervention from pharmacists, the expertise from pharmacists, those kinetics and those kinds of things that pharmacists have a good understanding and grasp of. They can provide that education to the care team, maybe even to the patient, recommending things like protein shakes and just ways and different strategies to increase that patient's protein levels. And a lot of times, just simple interventions like that, because we're always in the mindset, oh, let me just give them another medication. Let me do something to address that AE, but sometimes it's something as simple as a protein shake could actually take care and help the tolerability of some of these PARP inhibitors because of these characteristics that we talked about.
Outside of PARP inhibitors, are there other key developments that pharmacists should be aware of?
Absolutely. So, I mean, the ovarian cancer patient population, I mean, this whole landscape is experiencing a lot of exciting changes. There are numerous ongoing studies with various combinations, moving things into earlier lines of therapy, depending on what efficacy we can see. So PARP in combination with other therapeutics, similar to what we see, you know, we already have data for PARP inhibition in combination with bevacizumab. So it is going to continue to evolve and change. We're seeing antibody drug conjugates move into this space You know, not specifically for ovarian, but for cervical cancer. For example, we recently had an ADC approved in that space. And a lot of times you see similar approvals in this entire gynecological space. So we're going to continue to see a lot of exciting things that pharmacists should play a critical role in. But, you know, kind of speaking to that, I think it's important for us to also understand one of the unmet needs. So then as we continue to treat this patient population, we can help address that. I alluded to this a little bit earlier in our discussion, but Flatiron has actually looked at real world evidence for where we are in treating PARP inhibitor or for ovarian cancer patients with a PARP inhibitor in terms of the maintenance setting. And when you look at the data from 2017, 2018, 2019, up to 2021, that was the most recent updated analysis, still a significant trend. So the most recent readout was, I believe they collected patient data as February, end of February of 2021. Unfortunately, 38% of patients received maintenance therapy in the PARP inhibitor space from the data they collected, and 62% of patients received active surveillance. So I think that as we talk about the future and what pharmacists should be considering, this is a critical area where we begin to educate people. Now, yes, there has been a trend in increased use of PARP inhibitors in the maintenance therapy. So it has certainly increased from 2017, but it doesn't align with the number of FDA approvals. It doesn't align with NCCN guidelines. And that was all from claims data from over 1,000 patients. So I think these are things that we do have to be vigilant of, whether you're talking about things coming in the pipeline, there's still this unmet need there in this patient population as well.
Thanks for listening to Pharmacy Focus Oncology Edition. If you're interested in learning more about developments in ovarian cancer, check out the latest issue of Pharmacy Times Oncology Edition on pharmacytimes.com. And as always, tune in next month to learn more about what pharmacists need to know in the oncology space.